We started a sermon series last Sunday on the book of Esther, as a matter of fact. And we're going to pick up where we left off. So if you weren't here last Sunday, I'm just going to catch you up really quick. Esther is a Jew who was living in exile in Persia because of the great Babylonian exile of 586 BC. And so the Jewish leaders of that day were exiled and forced to leave their homeland and move to Babylon and then on to Persia. And because they were forced to leave their homeland, obviously they were in exile. They weren't quite slaves, but they weren't free to go home either. And since when this exile happened, they only took the leaders of Israel, most of them landed up, believe it or not, in government jobs in both Babylon and then on in Persia. And Esther's family, who we're going to talk about, was one of those families. She was raised by her cousin Mordecai, who had some sort of government job as well. Now, the Jews of Persia, and the Jews really of any age, were a minority. And that made life difficult. For many of us, we will never understand the challenges of that. See, any population where there is a minority, those folks face challenges and discrimination that the majority never will. I mean, we even get a glimpse of that in the book of Esther in chapter 2 when she was entered into a beauty contest. Her cousin Mordecai said to her this. Esther had not revealed her nationality and family background because Mordecai had forbidden her to do so. Now, he just didn't say that to say that there's reasons for that. Now, clearly there wasn't anything that was physically different or that differentiated the Jews from the Persians, but there was a big religious difference. And in that arena, the Jewish people, honestly, were the odd people out. And that led to discrimination, it led to violence, it even ended up in death. And we see that that is the case for the story of the Jewish people, not just in this time, but from every age. And then I would add to that that it's not even just about the Jewish people. Throughout history, when there is a minority group amongst a larger majority, there is discrimination. So Esther didn't tell anyone that she was Jewish. And she won the beauty contest, and she became the queen of Persia. And so she kept that secret for now. But shortly after becoming queen, she saved the king's life because a plot had been hatched by two of the guards that guarded the palace, wanted to kill the king, and her cousin Mordecai heard about it and told Esther, and Esther let the king know and foiled those plans. Now, that's interesting and important to know and to keep in the back of your mind for this very reason. If Mordecai and all the Jews of Persia that were in exile were bitter, if they were malicious, if they were angry about being held against their will, my guess is Mordecai would have never said anything and just allowed these guards of this palace to kill the king. You know, kind of revenge for being in exile. But we don't see that at all. What happens is Mordecai's actions remind us that the Jews in Persia were doing their best to blend in, to be good citizens. They weren't resisting. They weren't engaging in some secret guerrilla warfare. They were trying to just be. Now, with that in mind, let's dig in. After Esther becomes queen, we hear very quickly in chapter 3, and once again, this is a reminder, if you haven't read Esther yet, I'd encourage you to read a few chapters every week and kind of keep up with where we're at. King Xerxes, Esther's husband, elevates one of the nobles to the highest kind of nobility there is. He gets a higher position, and his name is Haman. And he gets this promotion. He was already an important person, but now he's even more important. It would be like an elected official, let's say like a senator, going over and now is able to work for the president in the executive side of things. Or a campaign advisor that after their candidate won, they get to actually go ahead and work in the White House. It is someone who already was important, but now they're even more important. Matter of fact, the promotion came with automatic respect, and it was commanded that everyone who encountered Haman now, because he was of the highest nobility or the highest rank next to the king, that everyone should bow in the presence of Haman, the Agagite. So that's exactly what happens. Everyone bows except Mordecai, Esther's cousin. He won't do it. He won't. And as a matter of fact, it says the royal officials at the king's gate asked Mordecai, "Why do you disobey the king's command?" And day after day, they spoke to him, but he refused to comply. I think it's amazing we were able to get photographs from back then to show you actual real life photos right there. And it's interesting that they discussed this with him. He doesn't blow up. He doesn't yell. He doesn't become hysterical. He doesn't say, "How dare you talk to me about this? And I'm not going to, and I'll tell you." And there's none of that. He has conversations and simply says, "I'm not bowing to Haman, the Agagite." Now, eventually, his colleagues give up on hounding him about this, and instead they go to Haman and say, "Do you know that Mordecai's not bowing, and you just need to know that he won't do it?" And in that set of verses, we get a clue to why Mordecai won't bow. It says, "Therefore, they told Haman about it to see whether Mordecai's behavior would be tolerated," that is, not bowing, "for he had told them he was a Jew." There's our clue. Now, I can tell you a bunch of things that I discovered in actual Jewish commentaries written by great rabbis. I can even talk about the variations within the Septuagint, the Greek version of the Hebrew Bible. But I'm just going to stick with what we have here. Not only would Mordecai not bow to Haman the Agagite, but Haman's reaction to this is telling. And I'm going to tell you why. He was incensed, he was aggravated, but it wasn't just in the moment. This has a long, long history. So to go back and understand why Mordecai won't bow and why Haman is incensed and really out of control, hysterically angry, is we have to go back 500 years before this moment. Israel's first king, King Saul, was commanded by God to kill all the Amalekites. It's a hard story, including their king, whose name was Agag, which means any descendant of King Agag were Agagites. Well, Saul, not being the one to listen well, failed in this, and that's putting it mildly, he failed in this conquest to deal with the Amalekites. And that only begs the question, why would God tell Saul to do such a thing? So we have to go back another 500 years. So now we're back to 1500 BC, and during the time that Moses was leading the people out of slavery in Egypt towards the promised land, on that journey, they were just passing through when the Amalekites attacked the people of Israel unprovoked. You can actually read both of those stories if you want this week, 1 Samuel 15, Exodus 17. And from that time on of that unprovoked attack in 1500 BC, the Jewish people were enemies of the Amalekites. Matter of fact, if you were Jewish and you called somebody an Amalekite, that is not a nice thing, just so you know. It even holds to this day that some of the Holocaust memorials in Europe refer to Amalekites and not to forget. So that shows you what a strong memory they have in terms of these people. So we go back to the time of Moses, then 500 years later with King Saul and their first king Agag, and we find out that honestly, no faithful Jewish person would ever bow to a violent and harsh enemy. Now remember, Mordecai, when confronted about this, talked to his colleagues and said, "No, I'm just not going to do that." But when Haman was told about it, he was out of control. It says that Haman, when he saw that Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honor, he was enraged. There's a contrast in personalities here. That he became unhinged when Mordecai would not bow to him. Now, if we didn't know our history of the Old Testament, this interaction wouldn't make a lot of sense. You would say, well, Mordecai's being petty, and ultimately Haman is overreacting. Well, he is overreacting. But history informs us that this is already 1,000 years in the making, and that God had protected Israel from the Amalekites for 1,000 years. But it continues. So not only is Haman overreacting, he adds to the trouble. Yet having learned who Mordecai's people were, he scorned the idea of killing only Mordecai. Instead, Haman looked for a way to destroy all of Mordecai's people, the Jews throughout the whole kingdom of Xerxes. So instead of just saying, well, he slighted me, and I'm going to get my due because I'm the highest noble, and I have the king's ear on everything, I'm just going to deal with him once and for all. He's like, no. That's not good enough. I'm going to get rid of all of them. Let's get rid of all of those people. You know, we're in dangerous territory, by the way, when we start talking about people in terms of those people. And it is a slippery slope when we let the actions of one person dictate how we would treat an entire group of people. I mean, if one person is rude or one person was not nice to us, you don't say, well, that whole group of people or that whole family is bad. I mean, just to be clear, that when it's directed at a minority group of any type, that's racial profiling, and it's stereotyping. And for the record, we Christians are against such things, regardless of who it is. So you know the old adage, one apple spoils the bunch. Let's be clear, that applies to apples and not people, okay? That's why it says apples, you know. Yeah, I know, that's like mind-bending, right? It's about apples, not people. Apples ripen, and when they get overripe, they emit ethylene. And ethylene is a fruit ripener. So when it's in the confines of other apples, it causes them to ripen more quickly and hence spoil. So Haman is so callous that he gets his cronies together, and they decide how we're going to kill not just Mordecai, but all the Jewish people. And he's so callous about it, the way they determine the date of when they're going to kill all the Jewish people is they roll the dice as if it didn't matter. Let's just make it a game, and we'll cast lots. There's an ancient die down there. And that's what they did. They rolled dice and said, okay, whatever the date comes up, that's what we're going to do. And we see that Haman is unhinged, that he's not thinking clearly. And it's interesting to note that the Bible actually talks about when people have that kind of ego and that kind of pride, and when they're driven to those kind of extremes, nothing good comes of it. Matter of fact, you might know this verse, but it's possible you didn't know it was in the Bible. Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before the fall. Or simplified, pride goes before the fall. With this information alone, with just this verse in mind and thinking about Haman, you probably already know that Haman's plans will end up not succeeding. I don't want to be the spoiler in this, but you can tell that this is not going to work out for Haman. But he does have a pride problem, and it does not allow him to make good decisions because it's only about him. And that's what pride does, and that's what ego does, is it makes it about ourselves, and we only make decisions that reinforce what we already believe when we start acting like Haman in life, that our own character flaw only reinforces what we believe. Someone slights me, and we go, who do they think they are? Don't they know who I am? I'm going to show them a thing or two. They'll regret the day that they crossed me. I mean, that's every day on 280 for me, but, you know. But at one time or another, we've had thoughts like this. You know, they better not mess with me. But it's pride that gets in the way. And he is definitely a hateful person. There's no doubt about it. So he continues this plan after setting the date by rolling the dice so callously. And he goes to the king in his newly elevated position. And so he whispers into the king's ear. Then Haman said to King Xerxes, and you heard this earlier, but let me remind you. There's a certain people dispersed and scattered among the peoples in all the provinces of your kingdom whose customs are different from those of all the other people and they who do not obey the king's laws. It is not in the king's best interest to tolerate them, so if it pleases the king, let a decree be issued to destroy them all. And then kind of end up here, the king said to Haman, and do with these people as you please. When I was thinking about this, a couple of pictures. One is a medieval painting of Haman and King Xerxes, but the other one reminds me of The Lord of the Rings. And if you're not familiar, don't worry about it. But this is in the middle movie, and this advisor is whispering into this king's ear, and it basically poisons him. Now, when Haman does this, you got to understand that Xerxes has been the king for about 4 years, possibly longer. And as a king, you would be acutely aware if there were any insurrections or rebellions or problems within your kingdom. There haven't been. But he just takes Haman's word for it. You know, as for the Jews, though, on the other side of this equation, when they were on the cusp of going into exile, God had sent them a prophet, and his name was Jeremiah. And Jeremiah spoke many things, but in chapter 29 of the prophet of Jeremiah is really a letter to the exiles. And this is what Jeremiah's instruction were to all those people going into exile. Seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. So before these people were carried off to live in a land that they didn't want to live in, Jeremiah says, be good citizens, blend in, be good people, pray for the country you're going to be living in, because if it prospers, so will you. So the Jewish folks weren't trying to cause rebellion or insurrection or anything like that. They just wanted to blend in. And except when there were times of religious reasons not to bow to a false idol, they did exactly that. But King Xerxes just takes Haman's word. When the evidence is overwhelmingly clear, there is no problem. I mean, could you imagine living in Persia, a leader who seems to latch onto the advice of the last person who whispered in their ear without checking it out to see if that is actually the case or not? And so whatever somebody's going to say, they just go, oh, okay. Haman says to Xerxes, there's a national security threat in Persia that is non-existent. You need to deal with it. And the response to get rid of this non-existent national security threat is, well, you got to kill everybody through a decree. I mean, we would call that an executive order. Now, when we talk about who do we listen to, I go back to Proverbs. And Proverbs 13:20 says, whoever walks with the wise will become wise. And whoever walks with fools will suffer harm. And this isn't about just leadership. This is about us. I mean, I can't help but think about all the crazy stuff we hear online and all the conspiracy theories and all the stuff that folks are putting online. Read this article. I'm sure it's true. Look how bad these people are. All this kind of stuff. And it goes on and on. And even Scripture reminds us that we should be careful when it comes to just taking someone's word for it. That we need to be discerning and wise in how we process information and not to be like Xerxes, just taking someone's word for it. And at the same time, not to be Haman and just overreact to a situation, but to be smart and to be controlled. And this is how this story ends. Then the king and Haman sat down to drink, but the city of Susa was bewildered. So they seem fine, like, yay, we did something, yay, let's have a drink. And the people in the city, in the capital city, were like, what? What is going on? This doesn't make any sense. This has no bearing to facts or anything on the ground or anything in real life. And they had no idea. We don't get it. But since we're in a series, this is to be continued. But the question I leave with you is this: where is God in all of this? Nowhere or now here? And we will find that out next week. Amen.